Hey, and welcome back to another podcast with myself, Rich Martin. And really, really grateful that you can join me on here. Today, I get to speak to Pete Wilson. Pete has been a great friend of mine for many years, and we've worked closely for the last 2 years. And I have always loved long, long chats with Pete on lots of subjects. But he is a total gift when it comes to church and the digital space, as well as a whole heap of other things. And so Pete unpacks his journey, which is really worth listening to because it gives you great context into where he navigates. And Pete is like, he's like an artist, and the way he describes and unpacks is truly amazing. And so I love this conversation. We look at all sorts to do with the church space, to do with how church can engage with the digital a whole lot more. And it's not necessarily a talk about post-COVID or what can be done. I think that kind of conversation, not dead, but is definitely like we've moved on. It's more a conversation around how can churches now engage the digital space and how can they reframe what that looks like. And so Pete's stuff is amazing, and especially some of the stuff he gives at the end. He gives this amazing strategy that he's working on. And so hope you enjoy it. I loved it. And let's jump straight in. All right. Well, it's brilliant to be here with a really, really good friend of mine, Pete Wilson, who is all the way in the Long Throne area of London. So massive thanks for being on with us, Pete.
Thank you, Rich.
And I describe Pete as the Swiss Army knife of tech and faith. Pete has got his hands in some really big special projects to do with how faith and tech intersect. And so when I was thinking, who can I chat to about the digital space and building local church, genuinely, hand on heart, Pete, you're one of the best out there. And I love our chats that aren't recorded. And I was like, can I get on and try record them? And so before you go into a whole load of stuff of what you're doing, because I think it'd be really good for everyone to know, is you're involved with Integrity Music, where you're helping them, which is a huge record label, Christian record label, for those that don't know, and you're helping them move into how do we help in the Christian well-being space, which is all to do with, you know, beyond just the kind of corporate worship, how do we help people in their times where they're feeling like they need to kind of go a little bit deeper than a worship set on a Sunday, where they can solve some kind of meditation things, not use other apps that are out there, maybe that would point them to different ways of doing this through Buddhism or whatever it might be. How do we do this in a really good, special, ancient Christian way? You're also the CEO of Soul Time, which is this amazing well-being Bible app. And you're also founder of Neighbourly, another app in the
midst. Co-founder.
Yeah. So give us an overview, Pete, of how you've essentially ended up here, because you didn't start here. You started as a traditional church pastor, which is what most people essentially are, I guess.
Yes. Well, I started as a baby, Reg.
Let's not go there.
My parents got saved here in the UK. I was born here. I grew up going to church. We actually grew up in like a church that was took the book of Acts very literally and lived in a community, which as a kid was incredible. Lived in a great big house in the countryside with about 25 other people. I thought it was fantastic. Little did I know that my parents ran into some tensions living in that close proximity with that many other people. But then we moved to New Zealand, as you can probably tell from my accent, which is where I really got into worship leading. I was already musical, but got into worship leading at the age of 16, led worship almost every weekend in our little local church with less than 100 people. It was amazing. Man, great memories. Put a little youth band together, traveled all over New Zealand, was doing youth conferences and things like that. And then we moved, then I got married to my lovely wife, who is she's a Kiwi. And we moved back to London, where the first church we walked through the doors of, the first Sunday we were there, was Hillsong Church. Very, very early stages. I think it was like 6 months old at the time. One service, a little university theater, less than, I don't know, maybe 150 people, 200 people, something like that. And we just got plugged in there. We made some great friends there. We stayed there. In the end, 15 years, I ended up coming on staff full-time as the worship pastor. For the last probably 3 years, we were the campus pastors of the Central London campus. So went from leading worship every Sunday to preaching every Sunday. For many years there, I was...
Which one's easier?
Yes, well, depends which way. I would say preaching, actually, Rich.
Oh, shocks me.
I probably upset lots of people.
Yeah.
But the pressure of preaching is probably greater, but the work involved in worship leading, all the rehearsing, prep, everything that goes into that, I would say is harder. But I was executive pastor would be the term that most people would know there for a long time. Sort of running all the, staff and hiring and firing and all the stuff that goes along with that, and budgets and all that kind of thing. And oversaw all the different day-to-day operations of the church. And then we had a transition, and we ended up moving to America to join Joel and Victoria Osteen at Lakewood Church. In his words, not my words, these are his words, he had basically, his kids had told him that his church wasn't very cool. And they were looking at other options.
You fit the bill.
He said, but he said, he said to me, I haven't changed anything since I took over 20 years ago, and it's all a bit dated now. He tried to make some changes and things have backfired. It's obviously difficult to implement change, even if you think it's just a style change, an aesthetic change.
Right.
It has massive ripple effects and knock-on effects that are actually really difficult to lead and are difficult to pastor people through. Mm-hmm. And so I went there to essentially, if it was in the corporate world, we would have called it a brand refresh. A full brand refresh is what we did. I didn't go there to lead worship, but I ended up leading worship every weekend just because I could. And there was a need there. So we started with the music and the production of the Sunday services, but we ended up really refreshing everything, websites, TV program, apps, wow. Even the building got an overhaul, redecorated, redid the offices, recarpeted, all the signage got changed, all the logos got changed, everything. And I think one of the greatest, if I can say, successes of that was getting to the end of it on the last weekend. I stood there after 7 years there. I stood at the back looking at everything that was happening on a Sunday and mainly looking at the people that I'd got to know and many that I'd got to really, know and love. Mm-hmm. And thinking back and going, we only actually lost one person as a result of all the changes that we made. There was only one person that sort of dug their heels and didn't want to change.
Wow.
On staff, I'm talking about. And that's from a staff of about 350 people. And that person actually moved on to something that he's much, much happier in, and his wife's really happy there, and they're back close to her family. And so even that's a success story in many ways. It was really rewarding to get to the end and see a season of change that was led so well and people that were pastored so well through it. Communication was great. I mean, just there were so many things I look back on, so many things I learned through that process. We didn't change too fast. We didn't change too slow, but we really sort of brought everyone on the journey, and as a result, everyone's still there. And that's a great testament, I think, to, that's a healthy sign. It's a healthy church right there. So that was great. I was frustrated for many, many years. I was probably frustrated for 10 years while I was still working full-time in that sort of big church setting, mega church setting. I was frustrated looking at the tech space going, where are the Mark Zuckerbergs of the Christian world? Where are the people that are thinking big? How do we use technology to really reach a lot? I remember somebody telling me once at the Dominion Theatre in London, when Hillsong London was at its sort of biggest there, and we were doing four or five services on a Sunday. I remember somebody telling me more people walk past the doors of this theatre every hour than there are people sitting inside on a Sunday. And I thought it was so depressing. I was like, man, here we are thinking we're changing London. We're not even changing the corner of Tottenham Court Road. There are still more people walking past outside that don't have a clue what's going on inside here. And it was probably partly that kind of thinking that made me frustrated, because I looked at tech and I looked at the, and especially social media, and looked at that and went, now that's reaching people. Right, that's reaching the masses. I mean, what's Facebook now? 4 billion users, half the world are on Facebook. And yes, they are influencing people. I know it's all user generated content, but those algorithms are influencing the way we think and the way we, our world views are shaped, and the way we vote, everything. Yeah. So I was looking at that with some level of frustration, and probably seeing most of the tech that I saw develop, certainly in the sort of the bubble that I was in, was it was built to serve the purposes of putting more bums in seats on a Sunday, or building one local church expression, not thinking, how do we reach the masses? And so towards the end of the time at Lakewood, I remember my wife actually was the one that sort of initiated this transition. She said she really felt like God was saying, I was trying to move back to England. And I just prayed, said, okay, God, you're going to have to open some doors if this is you. And a week later, got a call from some people I knew, who you know very well as well. It was Henry Costa, and he said, hey, Pete, we're building an app called Glorify. I wondered if you'd be interested in talking about it. And I actually wondered if he basically said, would you be up for moving back to the UK and helping us launch it? Which I did. So came in, you know, very early doors with that. Got to be a big part of shaping that from a brand experience. I was head of brand experience is my title, but that really meant sort of a lot of involvement in content, branding, how we marketed, how we communicated, sort of told the story of what Glorify is, how we designed the product. And it was a huge learning experience. I saw that as an answer to prayer in many ways. A, it got me back to England. B, it got me into that tech space. And I really learned so much. We went through two major rounds of funding, where we raised venture capital from big venture capital firms, which really actually, I think that was a first in the faith tech space. It was a lot of money. It certainly, with that came a shift in some of the sort of the dynamics of how that was run.
Just on that point there, Pete, I know you're going to go on to how you're not involved with the other stuff, but people would be listening thinking that, God, you don't need a lot of money. Like you could just put some posts out, right? Like just quickly pause and explain to people about the cost of tech.
Yeah. And this is specifically the cost of a content driven app. So I think a lot of church leaders massively underestimate this. An app, to build an app that's actually the standard it should be, and this is just to build what we call an MVP, a minimum viable product, is going to cost you north of $1 million. I mean, every app I've been involved with has raised over $1 million in seed capital just to get started. That's to build it to, you know, you might need to pay a couple of people to be involved early days. If it's content driven, you've got to create content. And then you're really looking, I mean, most apps would then go and raise another 5 to 10 million in the next phase to really start to begin to scale up, go to market. Again, if it's content driven, the demand for fresh content is relentless, and it's way more expensive than you think. I mean, if you think from a church perspective, our major content deliverable every week is a Sunday service. Think about how much that actually costs you to deliver that 90-minute experience every week in wages and technology that you need, computers, et cetera, et cetera, the building that you have to hire to put that on. And put that into the app space, put that sort of thinking into the app space and go, right, if you've got an app that's delivering content, how much fresh content do you need to engage somebody? And in the app world, if you're not engaging somebody at least on a weekly basis, really you should be aiming for daily, then you're probably going to fail. But if to engage somebody that regularly, you've got to be putting fresh content in front of them, and it's got to be content they actually want to come back for. That's a really heavy lift. So,
just to add to that I'd throw in the mix is that the user, call it a consumer, but the church user, the user in your neighborhood is very used to using high-end apps. And so their expectation when they load up an app is this better work like name big app. This better work like my banking app. This better work as good as Facebook. And when it's glitchy or when it goes wrong or when it doesn't load, there's no grace. It's just like, it's rubbish. It doesn't work. Well, to make it work, you need really good infrastructure, designers. You need really good engineers. And I didn't know this when I walked into this world. I just thought, well, just take something off the shelf and make it happen. So the consumer doesn't have patience with you. Like walking through a church door that maybe isn't as good, there's a lot more patience but when it comes to this kind of digital app world, it's like, if it doesn't sound or look right or feel right, they've not got any patience with it.
Yeah, I often say to people, there's no social etiquette in the digital world. If you come to church on a Sunday, even if you don't know church, if you're not familiar with it, there's enough going on in the crowd around you. You know how to read the room, you're not going to get up and walk out halfway through the sermon because nobody else is. That would be rude. You're probably not going to heckle. Some people might, but you're probably not going to because nobody else is. Social etiquette tells you not to. But online, in the digital world, if it has poked you within 2 seconds, you're gone.
You're gone. Which is
if
which
it's boring.
Is...
You've switched over.
Yeah. Which is difficult because you'd say, well, that's not Christianity, right? Christianity would be more what you describe, more etiquette in it, socially, you know, going there. But the, what I love about your heartbeat is that you've accepted that, and rather than trying to rally against it, you're going, well, let's accept it and let's do something about it. So keep going, because I don't want to. We've got all
sorts of. I mean, even just to refer to that point there, the world is now living online. We can't change that. You were saying, I'm not fighting against it. I'm not. I mean, I think that would be foolish. Gen Zs are now spending an average of 4 hours a day on social media. That's where they're living, whether we like it or not. The worst thing we can try and do is beat our drum about getting off social media. They're just not going to. Mm-hmm. The fact is, actually, most of them hate it. All the surveys are saying, there's a recent survey that was done that showed that TikTok users would pay $29 per month per friend to get their whole group, their friendship circle, off of TikTok, because they feel like it's so negative and has such a negative impact on their psyche. They would rather be off it, but they're not, because they've got FOMO. You know, if they're not on there, they're going to be missing out somehow on there. We all know that those platforms all use it, they've got all the, you know, they figured out how to give people the dopamine hits that addicts them to scrolling and all that. And
it's the modern, it's the modern day cigarettes.
Yes. Yes. There you go.
Do you know, they know it's bad, but they can't stop it. And it's socially acceptable and everyone's happy with it.
Yeah.
But Pete, keep going, because there's a couple of other things that dig in.
Yeah. So from Glorify, I really got a passion for the whole wellbeing space, and I'm very grateful for my time there at Glorify. I mean, just to try and connect a few little loose strands here, because it all makes sense. Also good context. I think as a worship leader, you know, and a pastor preacher, one of the big drivers for getting involved in that, the reason I jumped into that with, you know, a lot of enthusiasm, was because you want to help people. I want to tell people. I loved seeing people really, you know, have moments with God in times of worship. I loved, you know, how maybe an explanation of a passage of scripture or a thought that helps somebody understand what Jesus was saying, maybe in a parable or something that relates to someone's life, how that can actually like bring revelation and really move somebody forward in their faith. I love that. I think when it comes to worship, we often refer to King David in the Bible as sort of the grandfather of worship. You know, he was out there in the fields with his harp writing songs and looking at Psalms, you know, all the songs he wrote. Well, there's also some evidence that David maybe was the original composer of well-being music, the original music therapist. You know, he played his harp to Saul, King Saul, and one translation of the Bible says Saul was restored to his right mind. That's a well-being statement. And so I think the Bible has the earliest recorded music therapy session. We have the precedent on that. And so I think all of that, you know, combine my experience at Glorify, and we started getting feedback from people. Glorify is a daily devotional app, essentially. But we started getting feedback from people saying, this is helping me overcome anxiety. This is helping me sleep better. And so that really moved me. That's what really sort of resonated with me. And so when I finished with Glorify, I was very keen to pursue something in that Christian wellbeing space. You might be familiar with Calm, which is a major mainstream wellbeing app, or Headspace is another big one. Both those apps are brilliant, fantastic content, really well built, a lot of scientific backing, a lot of emotional intelligence research. They have therapists and neuroscientists as part of their team, you know, developing that content. So it's great content, but it's not biblically based. It doesn't point you to Jesus. It ultimately points you to sort of looking within and sort of, you know, the whole ethos of modern day meditation without Christ is empty your mind and look within to find your inner peace, your inner zen, whatever you want to call it. The ethos of Christian well-being is, yeah, sure, you can empty your mind, but we're going to fill our minds. Paul wrote so much scripture about that was actually about our minds and really about well-being. You know, and he wrote, fill your minds. Think on these things. Here's the things to fill your minds with, things that are pure, noble, worthy of praise. You know? And Jesus himself said, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That rest that he's talking about there is this holistic, whole being rest. Yeah. Your whole being, not just sleep, but your whole being, like rest. I'm going to give you rest in your whole being.
Yeah.
And that's a well-being promise. That's probably the best well-being promise I've ever said. From a Christian perspective, well-being ultimately should point you to Christ, the source of rest.
Right.
And it should actually help you fill your mind with amazing, positive, transformational things. We are transformed by the renewing of our mind.
Right.
We're not transformed. Well, the Bible doesn't say we're transformed by a great, you know, moment of a emotional response to a worship song. Now, those things are all good. I'm not saying those are negative.
And
Paul doesn't even write that we're sort of transformed in that moment when we put our hand up at the end of a service and say, I'm going to give my life to Jesus. He said, we're transformed by the renewing of our mind. It's a daily process of renewing mind, filling your mind with the right things. So I, number one, I stepped in with integrity to go, could we actually work with worship artists? So here's the David and his harp sort of link. Could we work with worship artists to develop music that actually helps? Music therapy is a well-known science now, well-researched. There's a lot of evidence to suggest it's the most effective form of therapy, actually. And so could we develop content in that space that's made by Christians, that's prayed over and, you know, the Holy Spirit led? Could we create content that actually really helps people of faith and with their well-being? And then more recently, Soul Time is an app that already existed. It's been around since 2018. It's 6 years old now. It's incredibly well built. The technology behind it is actually amazing. It hasn't had so far, hasn't had the sort of the legs to really get going, but the technology is probably the best I've seen in terms of well-being tech. And so I've just recently, very recently in the last 6 weeks, I've taken over there as CEO. And I want to build an app there that, or a, if you like, a brand, if that's the right word to use, that becomes a go-to sort of name. If you're a Christian and you're, you know, struggling with anxiety or processing grief or can't sleep, then, you know, yes, you can use Calm, but if you prefer a Christian option, Soul Time, you know, you can use Soul Time, and it's just as scientifically sound, but it's also biblically based. And then Neighbourly is a, I'll finish with this. I think I'm done with my story. Sorry. But Neighbourly.
We're on the toothpick now of this Swiss Army knife.
Yes. Here we go.
Not that Neighbourly's a toothpick. Sorry, Pete.
Neighbourly really came out of a conversation with two other guys who are the three of us are the co-founders of Neighbourly, where we basically said, you know, I came at it from the perspective of, could we do something that's not overtly Christian, but that reaches into this social media world where everybody's living and brings something positive that's built on Christian virtues and values? So I just took the, you know, Jesus said, love your neighbors, you love yourself. How do we, that is so palatable to everybody, Christian or not, you know, love your neighbors, love yourself. We all think that's a good idea. So how do we take that and put that in a social media space and basically say, you know, prompt people, encourage people to behave in a neighborly way to each other in a social media setting? Couple that with there's a lot of fingers of blame being pointed at social media, and rightly so. When it comes to well-being, a lot of people are saying social media is to blame for that. It is encouraging narcissism, divisiveness, comparison. It does you know, create terrible issues like loneliness and poor self-worth and things like that. But really our thinking was, social media in and of itself is not bad. How it's used can be bad. It's a bit like music. You know, you can use music for good or bad, or money. You can use music for good or bad. Social media is not inherently bad. Could we actually do something with social media that's good? A lot of people say social media has become more media than social. But social media, if it was purely social and it was about connecting people and building relationships and, you know, having this connectivity, maybe where geographic proximity doesn't allow, you can still have great, you know, foster great relationships. But social media could be a great tool for that. So we have built Neighbourly, which is actually built to throw back to the numbers. We raised about $1.5 million to build it. It's built. We're on a secret undercover launch right now in two universities in America. So we've launched primarily with college students for now, but we're actually also making a bit of a pivot there and launching a kids version. So that, because we've got a platform that is completely safe for children, which is no one else in the world has. And so we want to sort of help that Gen Alpha.
Wow.
We want to help them to start their journey with social media healthily. We've called it social media with training wheels. Learn how to use social media in a way that's good for them and good for others. Yeah. Get the best out of it rather than being dropped in the deep end of a dirty swimming pool. Yes. So that's Neighbourly. And there's a couple of other sort of bits and pieces I'm doing, which I'm sure we'll get to if we carry on chatting.
No, what I love, Pete, is I love how, one, the journey of what God's taken you on, you can clearly see that it's an extension of worship. It's an extension pushing the boundaries, which is what you've always done. You know, I knew you a little bit when you're in London. I watched from afar what you were doing with Joel's church over there. There's always this boundary pushing, and that's one of the gifts you bring, right, to the kingdom, which is you're able just to push the boundaries in this unique, creative way. I think when we do look at this digital space and we come to the church, I think not so much now, but there is this kind of wariness of doing something. And so I'm talking like traditional church, you've got your Sunday service, what we've all been in and are still involved in, because obviously, I know you deeply love the local church, as do I. What's the cautiousness around kind of pushing more into the digital space? Where do you think as a church we've struggled to engage with it? I mean like the team that sits and decides what a Sunday service is, be it the elders or be it the pastoral team, those teams then engaging in the digital space. You know, most people would post the time to the church, most people would maybe post a link to watch the YouTube live, but then going beyond that space, is it even the role of the church to do that? Where do you sit, like, speaking to that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and I don't want to sound cynical with my response here, but probably if we were actually really to be honest about why we don't, as the church, why we don't engage in the digital space much, it's probably because it doesn't put bums in seats on a Sunday, at least not immediately. Like our world in the church exists around buildings, which I'll call cathedrals for the sake of alliteration. Our world exists around cathedrals, content, and crowds. That's the world we know. Cathedrals, content, and crowds. And if I could add a fourth C to that, it would be control. If I can deliver great content, I can fill a great cathedral with a great crowd. And if I can control that crowd, keep them coming back, then I can build a sustainable church or ministry. That's the world we know. The digital world doesn't want to be controlled. The digital world is fighting to decentralize. It's fighting for autonomy. Mm. It doesn't want to be contained. And I think most pastors are scared. Most church leaders are scared of the digital world because it can't be controlled. I can't control whether somebody watches my content on YouTube or if they find me boring within the first 2 minutes and they click off. I can't control the fact that actually, you know, half my church would rather listen to Jensen Franklin or Judah Smith or whoever, Sadie Robertson, or, you know, and they're gonna click off to listen to them and not me. That's it. I can't control that. And when we often, what I've seen in the church world is some sort of small efforts to innovate and do something interesting in the technology space, but because it doesn't immediately result in extra numbers on the weekend, we give up and lose interest. And just to go right back to the comment you made earlier, normally it's poorly done as well. So we don't have enough money to invest in it, and so it doesn't really work. It never catches on, doesn't put bums in seats. So we give up. And I think there's a, if I could use like a, maybe this is a poor analogy, but I'll use it anyway, like a sort of a parallel example that I can see in the world, old style management versus modern management in business. Old style management was, you said to your employees, turn up from 9 to 5 in the office where I can see you. That way I know that you've worked today.
Right.
It's industrial era management, when everybody was basically, you know, a machine. They worked on machines. So provided you were present, work got done. Modern day management just doesn't work like that. Just because someone's present doesn't mean they're productive. Modern managers actually have to, you know, they've got remote workers and freelancers, and the only measurable productivity is output. And the only way to retain talent these days is actually to serve their interests and give them something that inspires them to want to work for you. Like modern day talent, like the talent that you really want to keep, they're inspired by the cause that really drives you, that really motivates you. And they'll work for you, providing that you actually do something for them. If they can see that you're helping to build their future, you're helping them to grow and develop at what they're doing, then you can actually retain them. That's modern day management. Pastors, it's a sort of a, yeah, like I said, it might not be the best analogy, but it's a good parallel, I think, because pastors have got to make a similar shift. Old style leadership says, I know you're a member of my church because you turn up on Sunday, and I'm going to influence and, let's be honest, coerce, manipulate, and sometimes force you to be there because that's an environment I can control. I think new style leadership says, I don't want to control my members and control their attendance. I need to serve them in a way that inspires them to want to be a part of this in whatever form that looks like for them, like whatever form that takes for the congregation member, they can engage however they want. I'm not looking to control that. And that's scary for pastors. I think it takes a lot more work. It's a lot harder to measure. You know, the current model, if I can deliver great content for 30 minutes on a Sunday and there's a good vibe in the room and, you know, five more people turned up this week than last week, then I feel good about myself and I feel like I'm actually doing something. This new model actually requires church leaders to think about what is the felt need. Have I identified truly a felt need, and am I meeting that need? In the app world, that's what we call product market fit. Are we actually delivering something that people want? And then you've got to measure whether you're making a tangible difference, and then you've got to iterate accordingly.
I mean, Pete, we haven't got long enough. That's the dilemma with these chats. But, yeah. But you know, so let me just thinking like a local pastor, you know, and what you've just described, you know, I throw content up and I've got people listening from different cities, different nations, all sorts of, you know, it's like, that's not my people that God's called me to reach. Like, so I don't know whether, you know, just to push back a bit, put a bit of tension in the mix is, yeah, but if I do start doing a whole lot of stuff digitally, I'm suddenly serving people in different cities, different nations, and I'm called to the city, I'm called to the town, the parish, call it what you want, to build my cathedral. And so every time I put stuff out there, I'm now serving a people group, a good chunk of them, who definitely aren't mine. And so I don't know whether there's a bit of hesitancy to go down the route because it's like, you know, I'm trying to just do this really well. And every time we go online, I'm spending another 20 minutes reposting back to the guy who's in whatever nation complaining at the fact that I said something in my preach that he didn't like. So you just think, you know, what a drain is what goes on in my head. But speaking to that.
Yeah, that's a great. So I think first of all, there's the preconceived notion there that what we do in the digital space is distribute content. So straight away, because that is the world we come from, cathedrals, content, crowds, right? So we basically start with content. If it's great content, we can fill great buildings with a crowd. So our mentality is content. We're putting out content. That's the wrong, I shouldn't say wrong. I think that's part of the shift that we have to make. So one of my big learnings getting into the app world was the app world never starts with content. It doesn't even start with the product. The app world starts with what is the felt need. So if you're called to a local parish, a local city, and I'm not saying that even that is necessarily, I think what we're seeing is this expansion of what ministry actually is. I mean, there's a whole rabbit trail we could go down there, Rich, which I'm sure we don't have time for. Paul writes that some are given the gift of an apostle, teacher, pastor, prophet, evangelist for the equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry. The work of the ministry, by that definition, is actually done by the saints, not by the few. We've reversed that whole thing. We call people that work full-time in church, apostles, pastors, teachers, evangelists. We call that ministry.
Right.
And we're basically told that saints, you're here to equip us to do the ministry. That's the wrong way around. The few are supposed to be equipping the many for them to go and do the work of the ministry. Well, think what that means for the work of the ministry. That means the work of the ministry is in the marketplace. Mm. It's in homes, it's in hospitals and schools and political hallways and all the rest of it. Like that's where the work of the ministry actually gets done. I think there's nothing wrong. I mean, mate, sorry, we're jumping around a bit here.
Well, yeah.
This is how our conversations go. We can already see a separation of church events and church community happening.
Yeah.
Right. People are kind of a little bit now off put by, you know, just because I come to your event on a Sunday, that doesn't mean I have to be part of your community as well. or just because I come to your small group midweek doesn't mean I have to come to your event, or I can't go to that event. We don't support that. People are like, you can't control me like that. I'm going to choose my community based on my interests, my values, my proximity, my season of life, my theology, whatever. And I'm going to hop around events based on my preferences and my needs or what's convenient for me. And I think we're seeing a lot of sort of, we're seeing church leaders trying to sort of choose a model. Am I a house group model, small group? Am I a mega church model going for the big crowd? And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think ultimately where all of that I think is going to lead to is that we're going to have to stop and ask the question, what is the felt need we are actually meeting? And that's where this gets really exciting. Because that's a massive philosophical shift. And most people...
And Pete, before you go down on resolving that, I'm just throwing a bit more tension in the mix. Before you go down resolving it, like showing how that resolves, because I think it's a really exciting concept. What would go off in many pastors hearing this is, are we called to resolve felt need? Like, we're called to tell people to die to self. So felt need might be, I want a church. I'm going to go extreme. I want a church with parking with big enough bays, coffee that's, you know, from the Amazon and rinsed through a special sock. I want to make sure that the kids team is absolutely really well stocked. And I want the service to be no longer than an hour. And I want to be out of there, right? Like, I've gone very extreme, but can you see like the tension of the thought of felt need as you speak about that? There's two camps. There's let's go reach people in their felt need and help them have a really good experience, church time, community building. And then there's the other side, which is suck it up, kids, die to self and learn how to carry that cross. And I'm going to lead you in that way. And none of your felt needs are ever going to be met. Of which, yeah, by the way, Pete, why it's really special chatting to you is you've been in lots of that. You did start in you grew up as a kid in a community that said, suck it up and we share everything. And do you know what I mean? You've worked in settings. And so I think that's why I'm really intrigued. I don't know the answer, by the way. I hope you do.
No, I won't claim to know the answer. I've got some thoughts around the answer. Not enough time to unpack it all, but what we're describing there, Rich, as we argue the other side of this tension, right? We are coming back to all the time. We're coming back to a model. We're coming back to church is an event that happens on a Sunday, and we're talking about felt need from the perspective of people want a big parking lot and a great kids ministry and a sermon that doesn't last for more than 12 minutes, like a good TED talk or whatever, and great coffee. That's not what I'm talking about. I don't think there's anything wrong with mega church, by the way. I don't think there's anything wrong with home church. I don't think there's anything wrong with parachurch ministries. None of them are bad. In fact, they're all good. Mm. It's when the model becomes the thing that we're serving that it can turn bad, right?
Right.
Rather than the people. Actually, we need all the expressions of church. But what I see as exciting about, like, when we're talking about what's the felt need, I mean, I would say Jesus, the model that we see from Jesus is Jesus walked around meeting needs, healing the sick, delivering the oppressed. He met need, like wherever he went, he met need. Mm. And there was rarely a time where you saw Jesus, whipping up a large volunteer base of servants to go and put on a big event for him to come and preach at. Rarely. And then there must have been some organization that went into those big, preaching moments, Sermon on the Mount. There must have been some organization, surely. I don't know. Maybe there wasn't. The Bible makes it seem very organic. But, what Jesus actually walked around spending most of his time doing was meeting need. Hmm. Freeing somebody from shame. The woman caught in adultery. Hmm. Telling someone their sins are forgiven. Hmm. Healing somebody who's been lame their whole life. Hmm. Blind. Da, 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 prophesying over the woman at the well, but that's what Jesus went around doing. That's the kind of thing I'm thinking about. What are the felt needs? So what I see us shifting away from a model-based thinking. We think very model-based at the moment. What's the model that I'm building? And shifting to, this is what I've learned from the tech, from the app world, is we start with what's the felt need we're trying to meet. What's the felt need amongst the community of people that maybe you're engaged with? And I'm talking, I'm not just talking about what do they want to be convenient. I'm talking about marriages, discipleship, you know, how are they growing in their faith? How are they doing parenting their kids? Crime, you know, dysfunctional families, loneliness, elderly people who are fearful for their own safety when they walk out of their front doors, poverty, people that come, you know, what are we doing to meet some of these needs? And it's not all that it's about just, you know, reach and say, you know,
but that's a really good distinction you just made there, Pete, because when you hear the word felt need, you go to a commercial sense. How do we get more bums on seats? Felt need. How do we make this a lot more comfortable for them? But you're talking about the felt need of their soul, the felt need of the village soul, the city soul that's involved. The, you know, we find ourselves in a city that is awash with discrimination because of various political events that are going on. We find ourselves in a city that is in deep crime because of a lack of whatever. Yeah. So keep going, because I know we haven't got enough time, and this is the problem of speaking to a creative Pete, right? If I spoke to like we've got about 7 canvases out that we're painting on at the moment.
We have. We're sort of jumping around a bit all over the place, but I mean, one thing that'd be really helpful is if we could maybe just call things what they are a little bit more clearly, you know, let just at the risk of sounding slightly cynical, a church event is not church. It's an event. You know, a church pastor these days is actually probably more of a in a mega church setting, is probably more of a motivational speaker than they are really a pastor. Pastoring by definition is caring for people and getting down in the dirt with them. Being at the bedside when they're in hospital, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of mega church pastors are probably really actually more entrepreneurial. They're actually entrepreneurs. They're building, you know, ventures. They're building entities. A social justice ministry is a cause. That's not church. Jesus is not returning for a model or a building or a brand. He's returning for people. He's returning for his people.
Shift into how they could then engage. So into this digital space.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of, I've written down a couple of stop start type things that I've just mulled over the recent years, months and years. But I think one of the things I would encourage people, stop thinking of digital strategy as a way to fill your building on a Sunday. Start thinking of a digital strategy that helps you identify felt needs of people that you can actually meet. So there's a two-pronged thing there. It's identify a felt need. You can't meet all the need. That's one thing that I see as a bit of a problem in the current church model is we say, because you come to this event on a Sunday, we're going to provide everything you could ever need. Advice on your marriage, advice on your finances, advice as a parent, you know, a shoulder to cry on when you're processing grief, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to provide everything you could ever need. You can't. And one of the amazing things that the digital world allows us to do is to connect with all these other facets and expressions and arms of the body that have all these other solutions. We just need to sort of let go of our fear of, but if they're getting help over there, I might lose them. That's one of the challenges, I think, ahead of us. So identify felt need that we can actually meet and then we can meet really well. Stop using digital platforms as just an extra distribution channel for your content, your Sunday content. You can put content out there, sure. That's not the most effective use. I would say start using digital platforms as a way of engaging people with helpful content that's actually meeting a need. So again, just thinking through before we blindly just sort of go, well, I preached a great sermon this Sunday, put it on YouTube. I'm sure loads of people want to hear that again. Before we blindly do that, think about, well, who's on YouTube? What are they actually looking for on YouTube? What length of content do they want? To try and give, I don't want to sound like I'm all being negative, like, who's the vicar over at St. Aldate's? Stephen Foster. Yeah. One of the things I've seen him do, like, so they do stream their service on a Sunday. You know, some people might like it. I'm not a big fan, but if they think of streaming a live Sunday service. But one of the things he does really well is he'll take like a thought. Maybe it's the thought he just preached on Sunday, and he'll do a 90-second YouTube short video. Maybe 2 minutes.
Came up on mine yesterday. He's got some guy from his gym swinging a kettlebell or some lifting some weight.
Right. Yeah. And that is somebody who's actually thought through what kind of content is going to be helpful to somebody? What are they actually looking for? What are they actually going to take the time to watch? And how do I distribute that then to them in a way that's helping with meeting and felt needs? I think that's another thing to do. Stop using digital communities as a profile building tool for your own prominence or a promotional tool for your event, and start using digital communities as an engaging source of connection between people and a great storytelling medium. I mean, and social media is probably the best storytelling medium we have, but I don't see many churches using it as a good storytelling medium. I see churches using it to promote what just happened in their building on a Sunday, to promote who's coming to their building next Sunday, to promote the pastor and the pastor's message and how awesome the pastor is, and it's the pastor's birthday and we should celebrate them. And, you know, it's like, man, guys, that just looks like you're building a celebrity profile. That's all that looks like. Imagine if we use social media to tell the stories of what God is doing in people's lives, real people, tangible changes that are happening in people's lives that glorify God and don't necessarily glorify our church brand or the senior pastor's name, but they just glorify God and tell the real stories of real lives. That's the church owns the testimonial space. We've been telling testimonies since Exodus, but you know, that's, we own the testimonial space, and social media gives us a medium to tell those stories and like never before. So I'd love to see the church starting to think like that. But yeah, I don't know if I've answered the question well, mate, but that's my
idea. Oh, no. This is absolutely perfect. Like, I think it's great. Like, what I love is the way that you flip digital on its head and digital for the church. And also you deeply love and know the church, you know, and we've talked at length on this, and you know what it is. Just wrap up with this question, Pete, or is there anything you want, you've got lots, but anything you want to wrap up with?
Well, I'll give you a real life thing that I'm working on right now. And I do see this as a case study for exactly what we're talking about. I'm working with a church in Aberdeen called King's Church. Great church, great pastor, great team. It's a classic model of church, right? In certainly in the UK, we would call it a mega church. They have probably about 1% of the whole population of Aberdeen in their church. That's pretty good, you know, for a church to have 1% of the whole city in a church. So in most respects, we'll look like a big building. That's great. In most respects, most of us will look at that and go, wow, what a success.
Right.
I'm looking at it going, yeah, great. That's, you know, there's something good happening there. The fact is, the pastor, this is one of the things that actually makes what I'm doing work really well, is he's not trying to be a celebrity. He's super relational. He was a GP. He was a doctor before he became a pastor. And he has that demeanor of he just wants to help people. And just, you know, I walked through the foyer with him on my first Sunday visit there, and he knows everybody's name. He knows their kids and their grandkids. And they were in hospital last week, or they've got an aunt that's going through this, or, you know, it's like the classic sort of GP walking through the community type vibe. So I love that about him. He's also super well connected in the city because he's just got this heart to serve. So all the other church pastors in town get on really well with him. That's not the usual sort of territorial tensions. The city themselves, like the civic authorities in the city, actually have great relationships with them as well and are calling on them. He has monthly meetings with the mayor's office because the city are calling on them to try and help meet some of the needs in the city. So my pitch to them was, Aberdeen's a very transient city. So just add that bit of context, because my pitch to them was, because of oil and gas, they've got families moving in all over the world all the time, right? I said to them, you don't know about a new family moving to Aberdeen until they walk through the doors of your church on a Sunday. That's the old model. The old model is, we've got a building, we open the doors for a couple of hours on a Sunday. Good luck. Find us if you can, you know, like, and if our team does a good job, they realize that's a new family. And I identify them. And then at that point, we can then go, oh, you've got kids. We've got kids life. You've got youth. We've got youth group. You're married. We've got a marriage ministry. Oh, you want to meet new people. We've got all these social things going on in small groups you can join. Da, 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 da. And we unroll the, you know, here's all the suite of services that we can offer you. Great. But it's all dependent on that family finding the front doors of that church at the right time on a Sunday, once a week, you know. In the tech world, we can identify that family the day they search for a flight or a school or a house. And not only can we identify them, we can reach them with content or something that engages them at that point and helps them. And that's the point. It's not just content. It's not, oh, you just searched for a flight to Aberdeen. Let me put a preaching clip in front of you of my favorite sermon that I preached 2 weeks ago, because I think that might really engage you. No, at that point, what that family needs is help moving to Aberdeen. What can we do to help you? And here's where I think the big what I could see coming, and I hope this happens, mate. I really hope this happens. What we're testing in Aberdeen is, can we actually get, I said to them right at the start, I said to the pastor, I would love to help you test this model, but I won't do it if you tell me that everybody that we engage with online has to end up in your church, because that is impossible. I can't do that. And he said, no, that's not it at all. He said, they can end up in any church. Even if they end up in no church, I just want to serve people and help people. I was like, okay, we can do that. We can work together. So what we're starting to develop, very, very early stages, as yet unproven, but what we're starting to develop is, imagine if all of the churches in Aberdeen could work together, along with the city, civic officers, along with maybe businesses that have arms that do things within the community. A lot of businesses want to help the community, the local community. They realize that the point of being there in the local community is to help make the local community prosper and flourish. And the more the local community prospers and flourishes, the more their business does. So they see that. So imagine if we could partner with all of those different expressions, all those different entities that can provide different solutions to felt needs. And we could then tap somebody that's, you know, moving from Nigeria to Aberdeen with four kids, husband's coming 6 weeks ahead of the wife and children, going to be lonely, going to be trying to get themselves established before the family arrive. All the things, you know, going to set up a bank account and get a national insurance number. And I mean, all the stuff, right? That if you've ever moved countries, you realize it's daunting. And can you imagine, like, if we actually could work together, harness the power of technology to reach people at that point of felt need, put something in front of them right then and there, like at the point where we identify the need, put something in front of them and goes, we know what you're facing right now, and here's something that could help. And then still in the online space, connects them with real people that maybe have been through something similar or have something helpful to offer. Here's another family that moved here 6 months ago, still fresh for them. They found their feet in Aberdeen, and they've now got their favorite coffee shop and their favorite neighborhood that they've settled in. And then who knows, at the sort of the bottom of that funnel, if you like, they drop into a local church here, or a small group here, or whatever it might be.
They'll bump into Jesus. They'll bump. Pete, I know we've got to wrap up now because it's on the hour, and you're a busy man. But you know what you've just said there, which is you identify the felt need, which is a transient community, and you know, people are coming. But the felt need could be knife crime. The felt need could be single mums. The felt need could
loneliness.
Could be all sorts in there. And so,
yeah.
Pete, really, really special, because it gets the cogs turning. Where can people find out more? If they want to find out more, where do they go?
Well, mate, I don't have anywhere.
Because between you and me, Pete, your social's awful.
It is. I know. For somebody that talks a lot about digital, I don't spend much time on my own. The best thing they could probably do is just my email, happy to put it out there, is peter@5wilsons, F-I-V-E, Wilsons with an S, .com.
Awesome. Pete, massive thanks.
Old school. Email me.
please keep digging into the stuff that you're doing and so on, because it really is really special. Thank you so much, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Wow, what an incredible conversation. I really, really enjoyed talking through that with Pete, and shame that we had to kind of stop, but these things normally go long into the night when it's me and Pete chatting, but he's got so much good stuff to say and is also full of practical tools. So I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to try keep bringing you a whole lot more of these when I can get round to editing them and bringing them in, but it's all part and parcel of a kind of passion project, which is how can I get these conversations into people's hands to help you build local church. So I hope you're enjoying it, and have a great rest of your week.